Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Rimebold. And Jeff, we have entered a bit of a quiet period in the NFL, but there's always stuff to talk about, isn't there, in the league?
Well, you know what? There's so much to talk about, in my opinion, that's, you know, suspension related. You know, when you consider two really, really important players to their football teams are facing what could be four-game suspensions, you know, that's really, really newsworthy to me, because I think that's, when you look at Jameis Winston and, you know, and you look at Edelman, those are two critical players for those two football teams.
Yeah, let's start there with the news then, because Jameis Winston is expected to have a three-game suspension to start the season. This relates back to an alleged incident with a female Uber driver in 2016. I'm not going into all the details on a family podcast, but it looks like Jameis has landed himself in some hot water. And Jeff, maybe we, you know, I think it's, you know, this is a football podcast, so let's look at it from a football point of view and where it hurts the Bucks. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in at quarterback, but we know that Dirk Cutter was already under some pressure and he's going to be on a warming seat this year. And the Bucks open up at New Orleans and then at home against Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. Those are three massive games with what looks like being without Jameis Winston.
Yeah, and, you know, you can do it. Statistical analysis is going to tell you, you start 0-3, which is what they're looking at. And I think the Bucks were really, had done a great job in the offseason of really trying to replenish that roster, get that defense tougher, get that defense more physical, and then all of a sudden you lose your quarterback for three games, three critical games right out the gate. You know, that could be crippling to that football team. Now, again, what you hope is that Fitzpatrick, because of his experience and the fact that they will be better on defense, that you can, you know, if you can get one of those three, I think you're going to have a chance. But if you come out of their 0-3, Neil, it's going to be tough in that division.
Just raises more questions about Jameis Winston, doesn't it, Jeff? We've seen, you know, question marks raised about his leadership, and, you know, the whole kind of eat a W thing became a bit of a laughing joke last year. But, you know, a player who had maturity questions and issues coming into the NFL, some issues that had been off the field during his college career, and I think you made the point not so long ago on this podcast that Jameis Winston has delivered 18 wins in 3 years in Tampa. All this is going to do is turn up the heat on Jameis Winston, and I've already seen some quite established writers in the Tampa Bay area suggesting the Bucs just cut him and move on completely.
Well, you know, that's interesting you say that, Neil, because I'm hearing the same thing from the football guys, that there's a lot of sentiment out there. And again, it happens that way. I mean, there's going to be this initial, you know, reaction to a guy being suspended for something like this and costing his football team as dearly as he's going to cost that football team. There's going to be an immediate knee-jerk reaction, which is always going to be a little bit more volatile, I guess. But, you know, it's really frustrating when you draft a guy to be the face of your franchise. You draft a guy to you know, be the leader and to be the guy that you build your football team around. And frankly, they have. They've done everything they can in terms of bringing in weapons for him. And here you go, and you take a suspension because of an incident that's, you know, it's not a drug suspension. It's a behavioral suspension, and just, it's got to be just killing, you know, the people in the front office with the Bucks and the locker room and the coaches and everybody concerned. You know, you gotta compare that now to what when you say, okay, move on, cut him and move on. Well, what do you move on to? Do you move on to Ryan Fitzpatrick? You know, that's not the answer. Now, in the off season, I think what you're gonna have to do is you gotta make the best of this situation and then play through the season, see where you're at, and then reevaluate in November, and when you're looking at free agency and the draft and all those other things. But certainly this is not helping the Bucks, and it's not helping Jameis Winston.
It is easier to move on than in the past, isn't it, Jeff? When now we have this rookie wage scale, I mean, you've wasted time if you move on from Jameis Winston, but you haven't wasted, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars. But of course, you coaches don't have a lot of time, so that's still a big thing if you've wasted 3 years of your franchise's time chasing championships.
Yeah, and again, two head coaches would have been through there. He cycled through two head coaches and numerous personnel changes to set the table for him so that he can, ascend to the level that the Bucks had hoped that he would ascend to. So it would be a big move to move on from him. Although, Neil, that's where you got to weigh the pros and cons and you say, is it better to, cut bait now and just go? Or do we try and limp through this and hope that he does grow up? But, again, I hate to sound as negative, but I just think that, oftentimes the best predictor of the future is the past, and he does not have a great past when it comes to these kinds of issues.
Yeah, I know you were firmly in the Marcus Mariota camp, weren't you, Jeff, when those two were coming out? For that reason, well, probably.
Yeah, as much as anything else, there were two factors. I thought he threw too many interceptions as a college player, particularly in his last year in college, and all of the things off the field. And again, remember, Neil, we only hear the worst things,
right?
The reality of it is there's probably more to it than what we heard. We just heard the bad, the hard things, the tough things. And so, again, where there's smoke, there's usually fire. And I think this is a case of, once again, a team taking a chance on a guy's character and a guy's maturity, and they're going to get burned here.
You mentioned suspensions, Jeff. Looks like Edelman's won. I mean, I don't really know quite where we're at with that. It looked like there was an appeal, and now it's gone a bit quiet as we're recording this podcast. But, I mean, again, he's going to be a big miss, coming off the knee injury. So they did survive without him last year, and, of course, you've got plenty of weapons in New England. But he is a key player for the Patriots.
Well, I think he's a key player, and he and Brady have such, chemistry together. And I think he's a key player in that locker room. I think his leadership is important to that football team offensively. His toughness, his playmaking ability certainly would be missed. Interestingly, that appeal lasted all day yesterday, Neil. And most of the time, the NFL is, they're not going to suspend a guy unless there is cause. And so he may have the best lawyers in the world. And I just don't think very many times are these things overturned. So, again, I think it'll be interesting to see where we go with it. But if you're the Patriots, you certainly want to know sooner than later.
Let's cycle through one other bit of news, and then we'll continue our State of the Franchise series. We've got four teams left to do in our State of the Franchise series. So we'll do two this week, Jacksonville and Minnesota, and then we'll do the final two, the Super Bowl lineup from a year ago, the Philadelphia Eagles and the New England Patriots. We'll do them next week. Jeff, when we get to Jacksonville, Minnesota, that's going to be my Super Bowl lineup prediction for this season. So you heard it here first.
Oh, you went out already on a limb, my man. All right.
Defense wins championships.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you something. You were with them. You were up close and personal with them last week.
Yeah, I've drunk the Kool-Aid.
Have you?
Yeah, I've drunk it. But to be fair, I drank a lot of it with the Cleveland Browns last year. It didn't really work out. I don't think that was Kool-Aid, actually, with the Browns.
That was arsenic.
Yeah. One more piece of news, then. The NFL Network Top 100 has finished up, and maybe not surprisingly, Tom Brady is at number one. I just want to get your take on the top 10, really, Jeff. I'll just read it out. So Aaron Rodgers was number 10, Von Miller 9, Drew Brees 8, Aaron Donald 7, Todd Gurley 6, Le'Veon Bell 5, Julio Jones 4, Carson Wentz at 3, Antonio Brown at 2, Tom Brady at number 1. I've got two things that jump out to me, Jeff, and then get your take. Aaron Donald at 7, I think he's been robbed, but he is an interior defensive lineman, so clearly they don't even get the love from their own players and peers. And Carson Wentz being as high as 3 just backs up that whole belief that he was on his way to an MVP season before he got injured.
Certainly, and I think that, I take all 10 of those guys right now. I don't care where you rank them.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you on Donald. Donald, to me, Neil, may be, and he will never get the votes because of the position he plays, but he may be the most dominant player in the league right now. And obviously it's hard to vote against a quarterback and certainly hard to vote against a future Hall of Famer like Tom Brady at number one. But I thought Aaron Rodgers at 10 was a little bit low. But again, that that goes to show you, even with the players, it's a what have you done for me lately league. And, Von Miller, again, that was a little bit high, I thought, too. But, again, it's hard to argue with the players because they're the ones that have to try and block him and watch him work. So, that's 10 really, really good football players.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers finished number 10 in the NFL Network Top 100. He won the NFL UK Best Player of 2018. Jeff, we did this little thing last couple of weeks. So I worked with a media panel and we basically put together our top 16 players, and then they kind of went head to head in brackets, and we basically gave points to each player. So if you were first on my list, that got you 16 points. If you were 16th on somebody else's list, that got you 1 point. Anyway, we got all these players together, and Odell Beckham Jr. did just sneak into the top 16. And then because the fans love him, he knocked off Aaron Donald, Luke Kuechly, Tom Brady. I mean, it was just, and again, it's I don't think it was right, but it just goes to show that guy is a superstar who really has impacted fans and maybe newer fans as well.
I take the rap of being anti Odell Beckham, and I'm really not. I think the guy is obviously one of the brightest stars in the league today, and a guy that is attractive to, and you make a great point. He's a guy that the young fans particularly idolize and love to pieces. So in my mind, that's good for the game because, you're bringing new fans to the game, and that's awesome. And so, again, I hope he is back. I hope he's healthy. I hope he's, focused, and I hope he's, ready to have a great year, because I'm going to tell you something. I think the Giants have done a great job in the offseason. We talked about this. I think Saquon Barkley is a huge get for them. They've improved their offensive line, bringing Solder in. And the thing that would put them over the top is a healthy, focused, mature, Odell Beckham Jr. Mm.
All right, let's move on to our state of the franchise then. We're going to look at the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Minnesota Vikings. Let's start with the Jags, who come to London and play every year. They'll be over again this year to take on the Philadelphia Eagles at Wembley Stadium, Week 8. They went 10-6 last year. Then they won a home playoff game against the Buffalo Bills. They went into Pittsburgh and knocked off the Steelers at Heinz Field for the second time during the 2017 season. They were roughly about 5 minutes away from reaching the Super Bowl and beating the New England Patriots in Foxborough. Couldn't get the job done, couldn't seal the deal, but they did reach the AFC Championship game, and they have high, high hopes. Jeff, I've talked about this a lot last week. The belief, the confidence, the swagger, it's all there. This is a loaded roster, but let's start with Blake Bortles, because we always talk about the quarterbacks. If you're looking for the kind of one area where you're going to have to really focus on, what are we going to get here and what are the questions? We know how good the defense is. We know what Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin bring. But Blake Bortles they have higher expectations for Blake Bortles this year. He said that himself. And Doug Marrone said that his three-year contract extension, which was worth $54 million, also comes with expectations. Let's start with Bortles.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Scott Milanovich, who you remember from our NFL Europe days, and is a close friend of mine, is the quarterback coach there, and he loves the kid. Says he's got great work habits. He obviously is a talented athlete. You got to remember, and I think we talked about this on our Sky broadcast a number of times, the kid does not have a tremendous background of experience as a quarterback. I mean, remember he was a high school linebacker for most of his high school career, and so then he went to Central Florida, and he was in an offense that was limited in the things that he was asked to do, and then he jumps in and he has to, he's got a bad football team behind him, and so you look at his progression, and I think that now that there's a better football team around him, you see what he can be. Neil, he made a throw against the Patriots. That ball, that last corner route that he threw in the game, I thought was an unbelievable throw. And if the corner from the Patriots doesn't, I think it was Samuel, if it doesn't make an incredible play, they're in the Super Bowl. Mm. That's how much better he's gotten this football team. His decision making is better. His composure in the pocket is better. When we watched him play live in London, I was really, really impressed with a couple balls. He threw a couple balls. The comeback he threw on the sideline and then the wheel route for a touchdown, I thought were outstanding throws because they were in small windows. And again, that's, I think, what everybody's kind of been waiting for him to do. You got to remember now, again, the first couple years in that league, he had all kinds of changes in scheme. He had, coordinator changes. It was just, he didn't have a good football team around him. And so, again, we prematurely judge guys, I think, sometimes because you got to remember what environment they're in. Mm. Now he's in a settled environment, and I think you're starting to see the real Blake Bortles.
Yeah, he made some really big throws in the game. I remember we had it on Sky against Seattle as well. You were very impressed in that one. And Doug Marrone told me, Jeff, he was playing his best football at the end of the year, which is why he got that contract extension. Let me give you some numbers on the Jags. They were sixth in total offense. Rushing was first in the NFL. 141.4 yards per game. Passing, they were 17th. We'll get onto the defense in a minute, but they were second overall, 21st against the run, the number one defense in the NFL against the pass. So, Jeff, they averaged 141.4 rushing yards per game. Doug Marrone told me last week that he kind of likes a sort of 60% run to 40% pass, which is kind of the complete reverse of the rest of the NFL. He said he'll settle for 50-50, but he doesn't ever want it the other way around where they're passing more than they're running, which when you've got Leonard Fournette, you've added Andrew Norwell, I mean, I guess kind of makes sense, but it sort of fits the psyche of that team, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think you're right. I think there's no question about that. I think that's the way they want that thing stacked up. That's the persona that they want. They want that toughness. They want that ability to, you know, run the ball when they want to run the ball, not when the defense tells you you can run the ball. And they want to control the clock. They're old school. I mean, and I don't say that in a negative way. I think you could refer to old school sometimes as time-tested way to win, and that's Tom Coughlin, and that's Doug Marrone, and that's what they built in Jacksonville.
You look at the receivers, Jeff, as we finish up with the offense, and they lost Allen Robinson. They let Allen Hurns go as well. They did add Dante Moncrief. They've got Marquise Lee. They like some of the younger guys, Keelan Cole, D.D. Westbrook. They drafted D.J. Shark. But I tell you who caught my eye in minicamp was Austin Seferian Jenkins, the tight end who came over from the Jets. And they haven't had a young tight end there for a long, long time. It's kind of been Mercedes Lewis. So I wonder how he will fit in. But again, I suppose it's all just asking those guys to do enough, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, Seferian Jenkins, talking about him, Neil, there's a kid that, you know, since he came out of college has been, nobody's ever questioned his athletic ability. Nobody's ever questioned his ability to make plays. It's some of the other things that you questioned, his work ethic, some of those things. But, you know, he's in an environment, he's in a different locker room. We've seen this with New England where guys who didn't fit, you know, he didn't fit at Tampa, didn't fit with the Jets, well, all of a sudden, he becomes a fit because he's in the locker room with strong presence around him. He's got guys, you know, like Calais Campbell that you know are veterans that, you know, don't put up with anything in the locker room. They know what it takes to win, and all of a sudden he steps in line. So, you know, hopefully that'll be the situation that happens with him. I think this is a really good football team that drafted extremely well too. Neil, you talked about Shark. You know, he was much higher rated than the 61st pick of the draft and just fell, and they were lucky to get him. And, you know, Taven Bryant, you look at him. What is the thing that gets teams? And one of the things is contracts, because once you look at that defensive line, they've got some big contracts on that defensive line. So what does Taven Bryant bring you? He brings you great energy. He brings you a youthful guy who's cheaper. So now, at some point, they're going to have to let some of those contracts go. And here what are they doing? They're backfilling, you know, is what we call it, backfilling. Then you got Ronnie Harrison, Neil, at the 93rd pick. I mean, there's another great defensive player. So, but they draft extremely well, too. So I think the Jags are loaded, and I think this is a team that's just getting better.
Jeff, if you were to create a kind of Frankenstein's monster of a defense and to type into a computer, I want the perfect defense in today's NFL, it might spit out the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've got all those pass rushers up front who can come after the quarterback, linebackers who can run, swag and confidence in the secondary and physicality as well. I mean, we'll talk about the Minnesota Vikings in a few minutes, and their defense was number one in the NFL overall, but these Jags feel like they're top dog. I mean, today we're going to talk two of the very best defenses in the NFL. What do you make of what Jacksonville have built on that side of the ball?
Well, you look at them and you say, you know, again, I think the things you got to have in today's NFL, they have in bunches. They've got pass rushers. You know, when you can take a guy like Calais Campbell who can play down inside, and then you can also put him outside, you know, in pass rush situations, when you got a guy like Marcell Dareus, who's a Pro Bowler, who's not even a starter for you. I mean, that's how deep they are. You got a guy who they picked up and, you know, checkered past, all that other stuff. But the fact of the matter is, Marcell Dareus, when he plays, is a heck of a football player. He can't even start for you. So you got depth. You got linebackers who can all run. And that's, again, the I know Jacksonville fans probably get tired of hearing me say this, but you got to give Gus Bradley some credit because it's his design that, you know, this defense was built upon. It just never, he never got enough wins to be able to coach it very long. Mm. But this is a really, really fine defense with great corners, with defensive backs, Neil. And like I say, I think you've been around them more than I have, but certainly when I watch them on tape, that group of defensive backs is ultra confident, ultra tough, ultra quick, and can play any kind of coverage you want. You want to play single high zone, they can do that. You want to lock down and play man, they can do that. They can play to cover two. There's nothing that they can't do, and they're strong throughout the whole bunch. They tackle well at safety, and you know they have all the makings of what you need in today's NFL.
Jeff, I was going to ask you if you think Jalen Ramsey is the best cornerback in the NFL, but that might be being a bit unfair on A.J. Bouye, who's his teammate. I mean, certainly the best tandem, isn't it, we're looking at?
Well, I think it's maybe as good a secondary as there is in the league.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm talking about through the whole bunch. And then, like I said, you know, you add a guy like Ronnie Harrison to that mix. Where do you put him? I mean, golly, it's just depth and you know, flexibility, and you got guys that can drop down and play in the slot. You got box safeties, you got high safeties, you got corners who can play press. I mean, they've got everything. So I think it's a really, really good team, and I think they're just now starting to recognize just how good they are. And you mentioned the swagger that you felt when you were in there. I think it's interesting that these guys really do truly believe that they're the best defense in the league.
You think it's working out, the whole Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin dynamic? And I guess really, Jeff, actually, we go Marrone and Coughlin. I always feel like shouting out Dave Caldwell as well. Don't forget Dave Caldwell again, because, you know, we talked about the talent that has been added, and he's done a lot of that at general manager. And maybe he gets overlooked a little bit now because Tom Coughlin is such a, I want to say he's omnipresent in that building. I mean, it feels like he's, you know, he's some kind of like, you know, spiritual leader of that organization, and the way everyone in that building kind of looks up to Coach Coughlin is clear to see. You only have to be there for a couple of days to get that impression. But I think Dave Caldwell's played a big part as well. They've got, seems like a good dynamic going on there with the front office.
Well, I think what's really interesting, Neil, is the fact that you bring up a guy like Caldwell who doesn't get the credit, but doesn't seem to want the credit or need the credit, because, yeah, you know, it's like Coach Vermilia used to say to us, he goes, guys, if you want credit, go to the bank. And, you know, but that's a rare guy in today's NFL. You know, most of the time guys are fighting, you know, to be the next hot guy. You know, Tom Coughlin doesn't need that. Tom Coughlin's a gold jacket guy. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. And, you know, and Marrone, I think Marrone just likes to coach offensive linemen, and you know, he's a ball coach, right?
Right.
So he's not looking for, you know, to be on Letterman or be on, you know, some late night talk show. And Caldwell, again, seems to be a guy that just does his job, does it extremely well, and lets others take the bows. And again, that's one of the difficult dynamics when you become successful as a franchise. is that all of a sudden everybody wants to take the bows, and then you got issues. But this team seems to be able to handle that extremely well.
So they were 5 minutes from reaching the Super Bowl last year. I've already backed them to reach the Super Bowl this year. So I'm saying the addition of Dante Moncrief kind of offsets losing Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns. I like Austin Seferian Jenkins. Andrew Norwell up front, an all-pro guard, comes over from Carolina. I'm giving this team an arrow up, Jeff, even though they were almost there last year. Where do you have the Jags?
I've got the exact same read on them. This is really, really an elite team, and this is a very talented, very young, I say very young, but then they have experience too, and they've got leadership, and they've got all the things that it takes to be a Super Bowl contender, and I think that's what they have become. And we've watched it occur, and I'm happy for them because, Neil, it wasn't very many years ago we were talking about this team like you talk about the Cleveland Browns.
I know. Well, Jeff, we've just been through kind of, I know we've talked big picture, but we haven't mentioned Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, Malik Jackson, who was a big ticket free agency signing. I mean, you need an entire podcast to break down the talent that is on this roster right now.
Well, yeah, you look at that right there, and, you know, as you said, you look at that bunch of defensive linemen, and you didn't even mention Marcell Dareus, like I said, who's a Pro Bowl player. I mean, he didn't even get so. What level of the defense do you want to talk about? Because you could talk about that group of linebackers, all day too, because they can run and they're physical and they're young and they can play coverage and again, it's just an outstanding football team.
All right, let's move on from the Jags to their opponents in Super Bowl 53, the Minnesota.
Ooh.
I'm doubling down.
You heard it here first on
Inside
the Huddle.
And every Jags and Vikings fan is saying, no, it's the Reynolds kiss of death. They're going to take on a Minnesota Vikings team that went 13-3 last year. They lost to Philadelphia in the NFC Championship game. They won that amazing Minneapolis Miracle game against the New Orleans Saints. And then Rick Spielman told us at Super Bowl that they didn't handle that very well, and they didn't handle the feared emotional letdown that came after that incredible win, and they were never at the races really in Philadelphia in the NFC Championship game. But it's an offense that ranked 11th in the NFL, 7th in rushing, 11th in passing. Defense, as I mentioned earlier, was first overall in total yards, just allowing 275.9 per game. Second against the run, second against the pass. And Jeff, if we start there with the offense as well, I mean, I liked what Case Keenum did, but I feel like they've upgraded this offense in a couple of areas. One, Kirk Cousins over Case Keenum, and number two, getting Dalvin Cook, who was red hot for the first month of the season, getting him back and fully fit after those torn knee ligaments. So I like the shape the Vikings are in on offense.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question here. You look at this and you say, Dalvin Cook, Neil, was, you know, he was on his way to, I think, a really good rookie season. Certainly, maybe not a rookie of the year season, but certainly one of the top, you know, players in the league. He gave them a dynamic running attack. Mm. If he can get back healthy, and it's never easy off those knees, although it's much better than it's ever been. You know, the surgery and the rehabs are so much better than they were in the past. But if he can come back and be what he showed he could be last year early in the season, I think this is a very, very dynamic offense, because I agree with you. I think Cousins, you know, as well as Case Keenum played and as many plays as he made and the great throw in the playoffs and all of that stuff, the reality of it is, if you had to choose between the two, you'd take Kirk Cousins every time. So I think it is an upgrade, no question.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins was, I think, in the last couple of years, Jeff, really as well showed a, you know, willingness to not only spread. I thought he did a couple of things. He spread the ball around so well when he was surrounded by talent, especially saw that in the playoff season in Washington. He had a couple of 1,000-yard receivers during that playoff season, but also he was willing to throw deep, which is good news for Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. And I think he's going to have a really good relationship with Kyle Rudolph. I saw in minicamp, they had Kirk Cousins mic'd up one day, Jeff, and he said, it's like throwing to a mattress. It's just, you can't miss. You can't miss with Kyle Rudolph there.
Well, I tell you what, it's got to be fun for him, because, you know, for both of them, because, you know, Kyle... has long been a favorite of ours, not just because he, you know, was on the road with us and was such a great guy to have around, but Neil, when you look at his game, there are very few tight ends in the game that can do it all like he can, because he's a great inline blocker. He's a tremendous red zone target with his size and his length. And he's also a guy that's athletic enough that you can spread him out, put him out at wide out, and match him up against a small corner. And, you know, he can do all that. He just hasn't been in an offense or with a quarterback where he can get the football as much as some of the other guys around the league. And he plays in a, quote, small market city. So, you know, he's not going to be the guy that everybody thinks about as, oh, that tight end, you know, Gronk and some of those guys, Kelsey. But I think he's certainly one of the elite tight ends in the league, and I think he'll blossom when he has a quarterback like, you know, Kirk Cousins throwing him the football.
It felt like if we were going to find a weakness in this offense, Jeff, it would have been for a number of years the offensive line. But even that seems to be, you know, I don't think we're going to confuse it with the best offensive line in football, but it doesn't seem to be the area of weakness that it used to be. Would that be fair? What do you think on the line?
Yeah, I thought they did a great job of revamping that offensive line, you know, during the off season. You know, you look at how they were in 2016, Neil, and it wasn't pretty.
No.
I mean, it wasn't pretty at all, and you know, Tony Sperano said, I need better players. And they went out and helped him get better players. And they worked hard in the offseason. I think the jury's still out a little bit on this offensive line. And I thought it was interesting. You know, obviously they needed depth and they needed some frontline players because they had some older guys in that front line. And, you know, they took a kid, Brian O'Neill, out of Pittsburgh that is an athlete. But, you know, when you watch him on tape, Neil, he has some liabilities. He's not as big and strong as he needs to be to play in the National Football League. So I think he's a developmental player. So hopefully, you know, they can get a couple more good years out of some of their veterans, and then this kid can grow and get stronger and spend time in the weight room. But if they're expecting him to go out and play right now, he's an underpowered guy in my opinion.
Jeff, I just want to pick up on something you just said there. Then we'll move on to this defense that was ranked first in the NFL last year. Kind of tie head coach Mike Zimmer into that as well, because he's got a defensive background. But you said, Tony Sperano said, I need players. And they kind of went out and got those players. You know I'm a big Rick Spielman fan, Jeff, the general manager of the Minnesota Vikings. But he is always aggressive. He's always willing to roll the dice, not stupidly, but he always gives this team a chance to kind of reload the cannon every year. I'm a huge fan of what Rick Spielman has done in Minnesota.
Well, I think that's valid. I think there's no question when you look at his history and you go back to his Dolphin days, and he is a guy that will think outside the box. You know, his contract that he did with Kirk Cousins, the first one ever done that I know anything about, a fully guaranteed contract. I think that's going to be a trendsetter in the National Football League. He has, you know, he's got the courage to bring a Terrence Newman back, who's going to be 40 during this season. But, you know, when other people had, Cincinnati had let him go, Dallas had let him go, you know, and he still sees value in that guy. So he's not afraid to make hard decisions. And I think that's one of the great signs of leadership in that general manager's chair.
Let's move on to this defense then. And I guess, like, I'm just looking at the depth chart, Jeff. When you look at it the same way with the Jags, you've got playmakers on all three levels, haven't you? It's not like one level of the defense, you know, line, linebacker, or the secondary. One is weaker than the other. I mean, they are loaded again. Who's the key man? Let's look at it that way then, rather than going through it all. Who's the one that, you know, you really wouldn't want the Vikings to be without?
Everson Griffin would be a pretty good place to start. Daniel Hunter, those two defensive ends, Neil, are outstanding. Now, like you said, go to the linebacker core. And, you know, geez, Al, you got two guys.
Kendricks and Brown.
Yeah, I mean, with those two guys, you got Pro Bowl-level players at that position. Where I think they're going to be better is, you know, Newman was the slot corner for him a lot of the time. And I think that he still has value, certainly, as a player, but I think his value is more his leadership and his, quote, on-the-field coaching of those young players. Them going out and, you know, They addressed the need. Again, we talk about Spielman. They went out and got Mike Hughes, who will certainly upgrade that slot corner position. And he also brings them some return ability. So, you know, I think that was a great selection. And again, he's a Mike Zimmer kind of guy, because what has he got? He's got a little history, right? He's had some off-field stuff. He's, you know, transfer and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Well, remember, Mike Zimmer's a guy that could get Pac-Man Jones straightened out and get him playing. I mean, he's dealt with some guys through his course of his career and seems to work really well with that kind of kid. So I would expect he'll get the best out of Mike.
Harrison Smith's one of the best players, regardless of position, in the entire league, isn't he, Jeff? At safety. I mean, I think what a chess piece this guy is.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing is that when you look at him, and again, what is coaching to me? Coaching to me is taking your player and putting him in a situation to let him do what he does best. The reality of it is, you know, Harrison Smith would have been a great player in the cover two system that they used to run in Minnesota. He would have been a great player. But in this system, where he can drop down and be in the box and blitz and take advantage of his great tackling ability, his strength, his toughness, he's a transcendent player now in Zimmer's defense. He really, really can. He really can show all the things he could do. When Leslie Frazier was there, when they were playing that Tampa 2 system, he would have been a good, outstanding player, no question. Great players are great players no matter what defense they play in. But I think what they've done with him is now really open up the game to all of his talents.
Jeff, I know you just mentioned there about Mike Zimmer and how he can be tough on his players, and then he's a little bit old school as well. You talked about Doug Marrone, and you talked about what Tom Coughlin brings to the Jags. Mike Zimmer brings some of that to the Minnesota Vikings. I've just wrapped up my season preview magazine, which is going to be, it's actually on the printers as we speak right now, and will be in the shops across the UK next week. But one of the players I put on the hot seat for the Minnesota Vikings was Laquon Treadwell. And I researched a story where Mike Zimmer has him running stadium steps far too often. Even Zimmer said that himself. And I thought, crikey, that's like something you see out of a film. But apparently Mike Zimmer still has these NFL players running stadium steps if they're not up to the job. And I thought, he's pretty old school as well then.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, when we were around our guys from Minnesota, Harrison and you know, Kyle and those guys, you know, they kind of giggled a little bit about how tough Zim was and how hard it was to please him. And, you know, I think that that's, you know, his personality. He is a tough guy. He's been that way. I coached against Mike Zimmer in 1984 when he was a young assistant. We were young assistants in the Big Sky together. And, you know, he was the same guy. He's loud. He coached hard. He was tough on his players. He demanding, extremely, extremely demanding. He took that to Dallas. He's always been, you know, here's the thing with Mike that's really interesting, Neil. He was kind of one of the coaches with the Cowboys that was kind of one of the guys that you would see maybe ascend to be the head coach with the Cowboys. I think a lot of people expected that. Deion Sanders talked about it. And he never got that opportunity in Dallas, and I think kind of left the Cowboys, you know, feeling a little bit hurt, and went to Cincinnati and did a great job in Cincinnati. It took that for him to get his opportunity. He really had to wait a long time for his chance, and I think he's done a great job taking a Viking team that was maybe a little bit soft, frankly, when he came in there, and he has really hardened them and toughened them and got them in better shape, and made their mental toughness way better than they've been in the past. And again, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they handle the meltdown, though, that they had in Philadelphia. If there's going to be some residual, effect of that through the offseason.
So, with that in mind, do you have them arrow up, sideways, or down? I'm still going up because of the addition of Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at Hughes, you look at Cousins, you look at, you know, what they, Sheldon Richardson, you look at some of the guys they brought in there to meet needs that they had. I think this is a team that, you know, again, here we are talking about Sheldon Richardson. We didn't even mention him. And you're talking about Rick Spielman being a guy that goes out and can get you players. Well, that guy can be a Pro Bowl level player too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think this team's arrow up.
All right, well, we only have two teams to take care of in today's State of the Franchise, so we can get a couple more questions in the mailbag, Jeff. Let's do that right now with the first one from Sam Marcangelo, who says, there is talk of Terrell Owens signing with the Packers. He certainly does want to return to the NFL, by all accounts. The question is a 40-year-old guy still a legitimate option as an NFL receiver? Surely he's lost his quickness, but he could be useful as a red zone guy, but isn't that why they got Jimmy Graham? So let's give you a little bit of background on Terrell Owens. So he's going into the Hall of Fame this year. He's 44 years old, so he's been, what, five years removed from the NFL?
Mm-hmm.
But recently, Jeff, he ran a 4.3 40. But tell me, is a 4.3 40 in a straight line at 44 easier to do than play receiver down in and down out? What do you think?
Well, the fact that you run 4.3 at 44 is like, that blows my
brain.
Pretty
impressive.
I mean, I can't even comprehend that. Now, I had heard that it was 4.5, but if it's 4.3, I don't care how fast. If you're 4.5, 4.3, and you're 44, it don't matter. You're still an athlete. Here's what I think about this deal. It's interesting and topical, Neil, because the Edmonton Eskimos, who's the team we play this week, last week put T.O. on their negotiation list. Now, a team doesn't do that. Up in Canada, you don't draft players. American players are put on your negotiation list. You have 30 spots, and you know they are the only team that the player can negotiate with for a contract. If they put him on the neg list, then there is some serious interest in the athlete playing, right? So I think, yes, I do think he will play football this year. If it's with the Packers, it would not surprise me. If it's up here, that would surprise me even less. You know, Chad Ochocinco did it. He came up here and played 2 or 3 years at the end. And I think that what that tells me is that Terrell Owens is looking at getting back in the game, and he's exercising all of his options to get back in the game.
Jeff, I was on the road last week, of course, and this was the talk of many of the American and NFL talk radio. It was all about, why is Terrell Owens disrespecting the Hall of Fame? Why is Terrell Owens not going to be at the Hall of Fame ceremony? And all I kept thinking, I was almost shouting it at the radio, was like, he probably thinks he's going to be with a team. That's how he's thinking.
That's exactly right. Neil, he came up and spoke. We have an off-season award thing here called the Orange Helmet Awards, and he came up and was one of the keynote speakers at the Orange Helmet Awards. And he told anybody that was in earshot that he wanted to play again. He felt he could play again. He's in. I'll tell you what, you could bounce a dime off his abs. I mean, he is in phenomenal shape, and I don't care how old he is, he's in as good a shape as any 24-year-old guy. So I think he's hungry to play again, and that it's hard now. You know this because you've dealt with a lot of players. It's hard to be in shape and know that you still can, and it's hard to let that go.
Jeff, you can bounce a dime off my abs, but you might not get it back for a while. it's gonna squidge right in there. It might not come back out. Let's take this one from Andy Hellier, who says, are the Dallas Cowboys' chances this season improved by not having a number one receiver for Dak Prescott? Jeff, I know where Andy's going with this, because we said it. This was a bit of a narrative we had for Matthew Stafford a couple of years ago, that with no Calvin Johnson, he was able to spread the ball around. I'm not sure you'd always want to not have a number one receiver. What's your thoughts on Dak and the fact the Cowboys don't have a clear-cut number one?
Well, I think it's really interesting. Everybody wants a number one, but you want that number one to be a guy like Julio Jones, or one of those guys that just Michael Thomas. You want a guy that just does his job and is not a distraction and all the other things that sometimes come with number one receivers. But I get it. I understand where he's going with this, although I don't know. When you look at that receiving core, obviously there are limitations in all of them. I mean, I'm the biggest Cole Beasley fan going, but I also understand there are certain things that he struggles to do and you don't want him, doing. And so you need a big guy outside. You need a guy who can go and make that contested catch, that guy that can, you know, beat one-on-one coverage outside. I don't know who that's going to be with the Cowboys.
Let's take this one from Alex Perkins. He says, are rookie contracts fair, especially for positions such as running back, given that running backs seem to have their best years in their first 5 years? Jeff, this is a really, really interesting subject, and it's a tricky one, because for every Jamarcus Russell and Sam Bradford who were handed, I don't know, $70, $80 million contracts as unproven rookies, you're going to get a Le'Veon Bell who can't get market value at running back, and he's clearly outperformed his contract. I know why the NFL took away that freedom to just pay tens of millions of dollars to players who hadn't even proven themselves in the NFL, and it was a better deal then for veterans, but some rookies are clearly outplaying their contracts. So it is a tricky one, this one. I mean, I think on the whole, I'd rather a rookie earn it and then renegotiate rather than be handed a Jamarcus Russell type deal.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you. I think the slotting has helped the league. I think it's, you know, put the money in the veterans where it should be, frankly. But again, you talked about those guys. Well, how about Aaron Donald? Here's a guy that comes out of Pitt and is a little bit older. And so, you know, if he would have had to wait until he got through his rookie deal to get paid what he deserved to be paid, well, he would be at an age category where you're starting to say, well, you know, he's got, maybe that's his last contract. And so I think it's tough on guys like that. I think it's tough on guys that are the rookie superstars. It's interesting with the running backs. That's where I think it's even more interesting than any other position, Neil, because you know what the average lifespan for a running back is in the National Football League, and it's usually maybe two contracts. Very rarely does it get to three. And so their earning power is so limited because they're, you know, historically they've been guys that were, I don't know what the, I mean, you probably have the stat, but I don't, it's less than 5 years. I know it is. So, you know, that would put you in your second contract. And there are very few guys that make it three contracts. There aren't very many, you know, Petersons. It's really rare.
Jeff, I don't have that stat. I feel like I need to go and have a lie down. I've always got a stat. What am I going to do? Oh, my goodness. I think we should probably call time on this right now. We're giving everyone 48 minutes. It's a slow time. There's nothing going on. Any other business, Jeffrey? Anything else catch your attention around the NFL? It's quiet, isn't it, at the moment?
You know, I think it's interesting, Neil, that, you know, there's some teams that have, you know, not had some high-profile players in minicamp. And, you know, I had a little Twitter discussion last week with a fan of a team that, you know, said, well, you know, he was defending the player not being in minicamp. And, you know, I said, yeah, all that's good, but imagine what those other players on the football team are thinking right now. Mm. Here, one of the substantial players isn't in camp. And I'm in camp. We're working towards being a better football team. Where are you? I think those things sometimes can be. And it was interesting because the head coach, it's the Giants. And the head coach got up in a press conference and basically defended the player who wasn't there. That's really a slippery slope, because the guys that are out there busting their butt and going through the drills, and, you know, I mean, they're, none of them like it. Right. Very few players that love going to minicamp, but they're there and they're invested in their teammates. And then you come out publicly and defend a guy who's not there. That's a slippery slope, because you now open yourself up for those other guys coming into your office and saying, hey, listen, he didn't have to be here, so I'm not coming. And now you got issues. So I think how teams handle that is really, really interesting. And I think that, you know, it's going to say a lot about the teams that, you know, have success.
Jeff, you mentioned camp. I've got my training camp schedule. And I know it always gives you a laugh. Do you want to have a listen to this?
Hey, no, I do know this, that I heard you're coming here.
No, I'm not.
Are you going?
No, I'm big timing you.
Are you kidding
me? Our producer, Alex Mason, is coming to see you. I'm too big time.
Oh, you big dog, you. So we're an hour and a half drive from Seattle. I know how your travel agent works. She'll have you drive 7 hours to go do a breakfast. What did you do one time? You drove from Los Angeles to San Francisco to have breakfast with Jimmy, didn't you?
Yeah, and I had Jim Tomsula, and I realized 4 hours into the drive that it was a lot further than I thought. It didn't look too far on the map, and I think it was 7 hours, and I'd set off at like 2 in the morning. I set off at 2 o'clock in the morning to meet him at 9 o'clock. So I'm going to.
Where are you going this year? What are you doing this year?
So I'm going to go at the end of July. I'm going to fly to New York on a Wednesday. I'm going to arrive in New York on the Wednesday night. Thursday morning, I've got to drive to Samford, Connecticut to do a couple of interviews, drive back to New York, then fly to Nashville. So that's Thursday. Friday, I'm going to interview the Tennessee Titans. Then that night, I'm going to fly to Los Angeles. That's quite a long flight. Saturday, I'm going to interview the Chargers, and then that night I'm going to fly to San Francisco. On the Sunday, I'm going to drive up from San Francisco to the Napa Valley, interview the Raiders, drive back from the Napa Valley, get another flight to Seattle. Then I'm going to see the Seahawks on the Monday, and then Monday night I'm going to do an overnight flight back to London. Boom.
Wait a second now. You're going from San Francisco to the Raider training camp.
Yeah.
Interview the Raiders, come back to San Francisco, then fly to Seattle that same day?
Yeah. It doesn't look that far, is it? A bit far?
Neil, are you kidding me?
It looks all right. Hey, while I'm up in wine country, I'll just neck a couple of bottles and I won't care what happens on the flight.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, they're in Sonoma. They're still in Sonoma, are they not?
Yeah, it's that far away.
Yeah, that's about 3 hours.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've booked it all now. Oh, no. Oh, I should have had a look.
Oh, my goodness. That's going to be a trip. I cannot wait to hear this story.
So, yeah, that's why I'm not coming to see you. I've been knackered, for want of a better word. So, yeah, there you go. That'll be my training camp trip, but I can't complain. It's better than working for a living. So, all good. Jeff, we're out of time. How's things going with the Lions, BC Lions?
1-0, we got Edmonton. We had our bye week. We have Edmonton on the road this week. So Friday night on BT Sport. It'll actually be Saturday morning in the UK. You can catch us on BT Sport and the ESPN family of networks, as they say.
Oh, good stuff. All right. Until then, good luck then this weekend, Jeff. Say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.